Our second speaker is Amina Jamal. Amina Jamal is a postdoctoral fellow with the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at Concordia University. Her research is on the relationship between Islam and modernity, particularly dealing with women and Islam in Pakistan.
Of course, I want to thank you all for being here today and for allowing me the opportunity to present my work to you. I want to take this discussion to a transnational level, and I will not speak directly to the war on terror. Can everybody hear me? I just want to know. Okay. So I don't have to be pulling it down. Is this okay?
Yeah.
Okay. What I'd like to talk about today is one of the prominent tropes, what I would call a gender trope in the war on terror, and that is the concept of the Muslim woman. That is the area of my research, and that's the area that I'm working in Pakistan. Although Muslim women are an extremely diversified group as a social and political identity, I propose that in the present conjuncture, the concept of Muslim women or even the Muslim woman has become a paradigmatic case for transnational feminism. And by this I mean that an engagement with Muslim women's issues can test the limits and possibilities of feminism as a theory and a politics. And as Sadaf discussed earlier about the so-called Sharia debates in Ontario that happened last year, feminists outside in the larger feminist community as well as within the Muslim community became polarized, and we didn't know how to speak to, and many of us didn't know how to speak to an issue that was structured in a very simplistic dichotomy of Islamic patriarchal oppression versus Western freedom and modernity. And this has further convinced me of the importance of transnational feminist analysis that may bring together the study of women, Islam, and modernity with feminist attempts to theorize transnational material, cultural, and knowledge flows that are shaping women's lives in different contexts. So in my own work, I examine how the continuing legacies of imperialism in the modernization and development projects of nation states, combined with new forms of capitalism and patriarchy, have shaped the context for different kinds of politically gendered subjects in those spaces of the world that are described as belonging to the Muslim or Islamic community. Drawing on the scholarship of transnational feminists, my work has tried to demonstrate that the discourses of development and modernization may draw upon both religious and secular, not simply to oppress, but also to resonate with the desires and needs of local subjects. And on the one hand, there is a historical constituency of Muslim women who articulate their demands in the language of universal human rights and fundamental rights of citizenship and define their struggle as secular. But on the other hand, there is an increasingly visible group of Muslim women who challenge the conventional narratives of political development, and they reject the idea that religion should retreat into the sphere of the private as societies become modern. These women are often referred to as Islamist or Islamic feminists, and these are the women that I have been interviewing. In the present moment, I am just trying to situate my work in the light of this discussion. In the present moment, the discourse of Muslim women's oppression appears to be recuperated through ideas about security and civilization in the war on terror, and Sadaf has spoken to that a little bit, so I will not go into the debate and more further into the discussion. But just to say that Orientalist representations of Muslim women continue to justify the rescue by superior colonial cultures, and the veil continues to function as a symbol of this cultural oppression. Now, I have pointed out earlier in our discussions in the workshops today that alongside the conventional images of veiled and oppressed Muslim women, there is another emergent image, that of the willfully veiled Muslim woman as a compromised activist. In the latest construction, she is problematized as an enigmatic other who defiantly negates Western liberal notions about social development and secular modernity from some misplaced sense of Islamic cultural nationalism. Feminists must discover complex strategies to theorize Islamist women in order to proceed beyond these unproductive politics of Orientalist representations. So there is a need, what I'm asking for is, there is a need to blur this dividing line of Muslim women's activism by tracing the ways in which different groups of women appropriate the discourses of both secularism and religion to construct their selfhood and assert their autonomy as citizens in the interrelated sites of the family, nation-state, and transnational politics. So the motivating question for my current research was, what does it mean to be an Islamist woman activist in a world that is being arbitrarily divided into zones of Islamic traditionalism and Western modernity? My project, Appropriations of Islam and Modernity in the Politics of Jamaat-e-Islami Women in Pakistan, focuses on women in the Jamaat-e-Islami, which is considered to be one of the key transnational movements of Islamic modernism and reform, and it has a wide appeal among Muslim men and women, not only in South Asia, East Asia, and Middle East, but also Europe, and especially the UK and North America. In Pakistan's large urban centers, it has acquired a significant following among women of mostly middle classes who are inspired by modern Islamic revivalism, but seek a moderate way between what they consider to be overly restrictive practices of many Muslim groups and what they reject as the ultra-modern culture of the elite classes. So these observations about Jamaat-e-Islami women are based on a two-year project that of interviewing and interacting with women politicians, parliamentarians, party activists, workers, and supporters of the movement in Karachi and Lahore, which are two major urban centers. And I will be happy to provide more details about this project later on if somebody is interested. But I want to emphasize for the moment that unlike many other Islamic or Muslim women's groups which seek only spiritual or pietist kind of affirmation, Jamaat women explicitly and unmistakably declare the political, not simply the personal, as being the main focus of their struggle, which is to bring about Islamization of law and society in Pakistan through the power of the state. Thus, they invoke not only religious agency, but they also invoke political rights and entitlements that are associated with modern citizenship and with the public sphere of the modern nation state. And so I situate Jamaat women firmly within the context of modernity and globalization, including political economic development. And so my work supports emergent scholarship on political Islam, Islamist movements, which has demonstrated that many of the contemporary political Islamist movements have emerged as part of modernizing processes in colonized Muslim societies. Thus, these movements are not simply a reaction to political and economic modernity, but in fact, Islamist groups may function as modernizing agents within contemporary Muslim societies. And they do so by enabling new forms of citizen subjects to emerge. These are religious citizen subjects. Jamaat-e-Islami, like other groups, engages in activities of social and political mobilization of people, especially from the middle classes. And also, they are very modern in the sense that they seek to harness the power of the modern nation state to bring about their social change. So an important part of my work has been to understand how is it, as specifically modern subjects, that Jamaat women can imagine new positions for themselves in the cultural political space of national politics and transnational politics. And this is what I want to elaborate on in the next few minutes. While women have always participated in the Jamaat-e-Islami, my research highlights the overwhelming role of professional, university-educated, middle-class women, mostly in their 30s and 40s, in the urban centers of Karachi and Lahore. These women not only offer education and training in religious scriptures, but also a range of important services such as women's rights, education and advocacy within an Islamic framework, legal aid, services for women in prison, working women's issues, and a very successful women's shelter. My interactions with these women suggest that it is unproductive for feminists to dismiss Jamaat women's activism as a gendered expedient of patriarchal Islamism. But on the other hand, nor should we celebrate their agendas as simply a resistant form of Islamic feminism that provides a challenge to Western feminism. So I argue that we need to approach Islamic women, that is Jamaat Islami women's activism, by focusing our scrutiny on the discursive terrain in which the feminist movement, feminist NGOs, and Jamaat women create their collective political, their cultural political selves and their activist strategies, which are always in dialogue with one another, though it may be very implicit rather than explicit. Therefore, some of the processes we must look at are the constitutive role of political, economic, and cultural discourses in producing different kinds of women. And some of these discourses include the state-sponsored discourse of Islamization in Pakistan, the neoliberal understandings of women-centered development, and I can discuss some of these issues later on, the transnational nature of Islamic revivalist movements, and the ideologies of neoliberalism, such as the sanctity of the nuclear consumer family and privatized notions of service delivery. And although it is not possible for me to go into an account of these processes, I will try to point to some of the main discourses just to give you an idea of how discourses travel from one part of the, including the discourse of feminism, can travel in very different ways that may be taken up by many, by different subjects in different places. So like many other economically strained countries, Pakistan has imbibed the philosophies of global deregulation, economic liberalism, and denationalization that have been promoted by international agencies and organizations for the last at least 20 years. The incorporation of the Jamaat Islami into mainstream politics happened in the 1980s during the Afghan War, when we had a military dictator, General Ziaul Haq, and at that time, some of you may know that Pakistan was once again a frontline state in the war. That time it was a Cold War against the Soviet Union, not so cold because it was actually a proxy war being fought in Afghanistan. And parties like the Jamaat Islami and other Islamist groups were increasingly incorporated into the government in order to legitimize the war in Afghanistan as a jihad, as an Islamic war in which citizens from Pakistan could also go and participate. So this is the history of how Jamaat Islami became institutionalized in Pakistani politics. It's just been since 1980s. This incorporation of the Jamaat Islami into mainstream politics coincided with the prioritizing of new development policies of the World Bank and international donors, which de-emphasized the state sector and began to channel grants and aid to economically vulnerable groups through NGOs, non-governmental organizations. And this privatization of the development project also appealed to ordinary citizens in Pakistan who were just fed up with inefficient and poorly funded public institutions, widespread corruption and exploitation at highest levels of both secular, till then we had only secular governments. While politico-religious parties such as the Jamaat Islami are the most vehement opponents of the NGO sector, whom they deride as proponents of westernization and internationalization in Pakistan, these groups have also promoted the self-help ideology, which resonates with their own project of dawah or invitation to the Islamic life. So what I'm trying to say is that the neoliberal discourses of privatization and the Islamic discourses of self-help within the family and community coincided. And I'm not saying that there was an intention or a scheme, but this happened, and these are some of the things that come together at particular places which people, including feminists, can't control. This is evident from the proliferation in recent years of community-based groups in Pakistan, we have now a number of community-based groups aimed at improving education and health within an Islamic framework. So we have both so-called secular NGOs, and we also have feminist, we also have Islamist NGOs. So like the secular feminist counterparts, the majority of the Jamaat women that I interviewed belong to a generation of women in Pakistan who have benefited from the development and modernization project of the state. And so they have different levels of qualification and skills that distinguish them both from the earlier generations of middle-class women and lower-middle-class women, but also from the larger group of rural and poorer women who have no access to formal education. So in a way, Jamaat women do see themselves as modern women, but they face a barrier at the cultural level, since unlike most of the elite classes, they are distanced from Western culture and language, and therefore they challenge the cultural dominance of the secular elite. And I don't think I have a lot of time to go into more details, and I'd be very happy to discuss this in questions in later on. But I just want to say that Jamaat women also are not just, obviously not objects in this discourse of Islam and the Islamization of Western of liberalism, but they also are active agents. And among my interviewees, not a single woman voiced concerns that modernity and Islam were irreconcilable. Women generally situated themselves at the intersection of Islam and modernity and considered both to signify progress and development. And to clarify this, I will cite for you the statement of Rehana Froze, who was a member of the Jamaat Women's Wing, and for the local city council in Karachi, and she said, "There is a difference between progressive and being westernized. Our misfortune, meaning that of Pakistani women, is that we have assumed all forms of progress to be westernized. We have no development and no progress, although our religion itself is progressive." So what I'm trying to do here is to disrupt the idea of seeing this secular versus religious women divide, and that it is a mistake to see the struggle between women's groups in Pakistan, at least, as being a struggle between religious tradition and modern development. On the contrary, my research demonstrates that it is the terrain of modernity itself that has become the major battleground in the cultural and political representation of Muslim women in a transnational world. And I think that's all I should say today. And if, you know, I'll be happy to discuss questions.